repeated the CIA's representation that Abu Zubaydah was the third or fourth man in al-Qaeda. This CIA assessment was based on single-source reporting that was recanted prior to the August 1, 2002 OLC legal memorandum. This retraction was provided to several senior CIA officers, including redacted CTC Legal, to whom the information was emailed on July 10, 2002, 3 weeks prior to the issuance of the August 1, 2002 OLC memorandum. The CIA later concluded that Abu Zubaydah was not a member of al-Qaeda. Abu Zubaydah's role in al-Qaeda plots. The OLC memorandum repeated the CIA's representation that Abu Zubaydah had been involved in every major terrorist operation carried out by al-Qaeda, and that Abu Zubaydah was one of the planners of the September 11th attacks. CIA records do not support these claims. Abu Zubaydah's expertise in interrogation resistance training. The OLC memorandum repeated the CIA's representation that Abu Zubaydah was well-versed in resistance to interrogation techniques and that it is believed Zubaydah wrote al-Qaeda's manual on resistance techniques. A review of CIA records found no information to support these claims. To the contrary, Abu Zubaydah later stated that it was his belief that all individuals provide information in detention, and that captured individuals should expect that the organization will make adjustments to protect people and plans when someone with knowledge is captured. Abu Zubaydah's withholding of information on pending terrorist attacks. The OLC memorandum repeated CIA representations stating that the interrogation team is certain Abu Zubaydah was withholding information related to planned attacks against the United States, either within the U.S. homeland or abroad. CIA records do not support this claim. Abu Zubaydah's interrogation team was not certain that Abu Zubaydah was withholding critical threat information. To the contrary, the interrogation team wrote to CIA headquarters, "Our assumption is the objective of this operation, the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah, is to achieve a high degree of confidence that Abu Zubaydah is not holding back actionable information concerning threats to the United States beyond that which Abu Zubaydah has already provided." B. The CIA interprets the August 1, 2002 memorandum to apply to other detainees, despite language of the memorandum. Interrogations of Abu Zubaydah and other detainees diverged from the CIA's representations to the OLC. The CIA broadly interpreted the August 1, 2002 OLC memorandum to allow for greater operational latitude. For example, the memorandum stated that the legal advice was specific to the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah and the specific CIA representations about Abu Zubaydah. However, the CIA applied its enhanced interrogation techniques to numerous other CIA detainees without seeking additional formal legal advice from the OLC. As detailed elsewhere, the other detainees subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques varied significantly in terms of their assessed role in terrorist activities and the information they were believed to possess. CIA records indicate that it was not until July 29, 2003, almost a year later, that the Attorney General stated that the legal principles of the August 1, 2002 memorandum could be applied to other CIA detainees. The August 1, 2002 OLC memorandum also included an analysis of each of the CIA's proposed enhanced interrogation techniques, with a description of how the CIA stated the techniques would be applied. However, in the interrogations of Abu Zubaydah and subsequent CIA detainees, the CIA applied the techniques in a manner that a Department of Justice attorney concluded was quite different from the description presented in 2002. As reported by the CIA's Inspector General, the CIA used the waterboarding technique against Abu Zubaydah and later KSM in a manner inconsistent with CIA representations to the OLC, as well as the OLC's description of the technique in the August 1, 2002 memorandum. In addition, the CIA assured the OLC that it would be unlikely that CIA detainees subjected to sleep deprivation would experience hallucination, and that if they did, medical personnel would intervene. However, multiple CIA detainees subjected to prolonged sleep deprivation experienced hallucinations, and CIA interrogation teams did not always discontinue sleep deprivation after the detainees had experienced hallucinations. The CIA further represented to the OLC that Abu Zubaydah's recovery from his wound would not be impeded by the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. However, prior to the OLC memorandum, detention site Green personnel stated, and CIA headquarters had confirmed, that the interrogation process would take precedence over preventing Abu Zubaydah's wound from becoming infected.
Note, 2314. After the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Zubaydah, Redacted reported that during the most aggressive portions of Abu Zubaydah's interrogation, the combination of a lack of hygiene, suboptimal nutrition, inadvertent trauma to the wound, secondary to some of the stress positions utilized at that stage, and the removal of formal obvious medical care to further isolate the subject had an overall additive effect on the deterioration of the wound.
Other CIA detainees were also subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, notwithstanding concerns that the interrogation techniques could exacerbate their injuries. The CIA also repeatedly used interrogation techniques beyond those provided to the OLC for review, including water dousing, nudity, abdominal slaps, and dietary manipulation. At the July 29, 2003 meeting of select National Security Council principals, Attorney General John Ashcroft expressed the view that while appropriate caution should be exercised in the number of times the water board was administered, the repetitions described do not contravene the principles underlying DOJ's August 2002 opinion. Records do not indicate that the Attorney General opined on the manner, as opposed to the frequency, with which the water board was implemented, or on the interrogation techniques not included in the August 2002 opinion. The differences between the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, as described by the CIA to the OLC in 2002, and the actual use of the techniques as described by the CIA Inspector General May 2004 Special Review, prompted concerns at the Department of Justice. On May 27, 2004, Assistant Attorney General Jack Goldsmith sent a letter to the CIA General Counsel stating that the Special Review raises the possibility that at least in some instances, and particularly early in the program, the actual practice may not have been congruent with all of these assumptions and limitations. In particular, Goldsmith's letter highlighted the statement in the Special Review that the use of the water board in SEER training was so different from subsequent agency usage as to make it almost irrelevant. C. Following suspension of the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the CIA obtains approval from the OLC for the interrogation of three individual detainees. Inspector General Special Review recommended that the CIA's General Counsel submit in writing a request for the Department of Justice to provide the CIA with a formal written legal opinion, revalidating and modifying as appropriate the guidance provided in the August 1, 2002 memorandum. It also recommended that in the absence of such a written opinion, the DCI should direct that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques be implemented only within the parameters that were mutually understood by the agency and DOJ on 1 August 2002. After receiving this special review, Assistant Attorney General Jack Goldsmith informed the CIA that the OLC had never formally opined on whether the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques would meet constitutional standards. On May 24, 2004, DCI Tenet, Deputy Director John McLaughlin, General Counsel Scott Mueller, and others met to discuss the Department of Justice's comments, after which DCI Tenet directed that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, as well as the use of the CIA's standard techniques, be suspended. On June 4, 2004, DCI Tenet issued a formal memorandum suspending the use of the techniques, pending policy and legal review. As described in this summary on July 2, 2004, Attorney General Ashcroft and Deputy Attorney General James Comey attended a meeting of select National Security Council principals, the topic of which was the proposed CIA interrogation of Janat Gul. According to CIA records, the Attorney General stated that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Gul would be consistent with U.S. law and treaty obligations, although Ashcroft made an exception for the Water Board, which he stated required further review, primarily because of the view that the technique had been employed in a different fashion than that which the DOJ initially approved. On July 20, 2004, Ashcroft, along with Patrick Philbin and Daniel Levin from the Department of Justice, attended a National Security Council's principal committee meeting at which Ashcroft stated that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques described in the August 1, 2002 OLC memorandum, with the exception of the Water Board, would not violate U.S. statutes, the U.S. Constitution, or U.S. treaty obligations. The Attorney General was then directed to prepare a written opinion addressing the constitutional issues, and the CIA was directed to provide further information to the Department of Justice with regard to the Water Board. On July 22, 2004, Attorney General Ashcroft sent a letter to Acting DCI John McLaughlin stating that the 9 interrogation techniques, those addressed in the August 1, 2002 memorandum, with the exception of the Water Board, did not violate the U.S. Constitution or any statute or U.S. treaty obligations, in the context of the CIA interrogation of Janet Gul. On July 30, 2004, anticipating the interrogation of Janet Gul, the CIA provided the OLC for the first time a description of dietary manipulation, nudity, water dousing, the abdominal slap, standing sleep deprivation, and the use of diapers, all of which the CIA described as a supplement to the interrogation techniques outlined in the August 1, 2002 memorandum. The CIA's description of the interrogation techniques were incongruent with how the CIA had applied the techniques in practice. The CIA description of a minimum calorie intake was incongruent with the history of the program, as no minimum calorie intake existed prior to May 2004, and the March 2003 draft OMS guidelines allowed for food to be withheld for 1 to 2 days. The CIA represented to the OLC that new detainees were not wantonly exposed to other detainees or detention facility staff, even though new detainees at the CIA's detention site Cobalt were kept in a central area outside of the interrogation room and were walked around by guards as a form of humiliation. The CIA's description of water dousing made no mention of cold water immersion, which was used on CIA detainees and taught in CIA interrogator training. The CIA representation describing a 2-hour limit for the shackling of detainees' hands above their heads is incongruent with records of CIA detainees whose hands were shackled above their heads for extended periods, as well as the draft March 2003 OMS guidelines permitting such shackling for up to 4 hours.
Note 2331. For example, Rita Al-Najjar was reported to have undergone hanging, described as handcuffing one or both of his wrists to an overhead horizontal bar for 22 hours each day for 2 consecutive days.
The CIA further represented to the OLC that the use of diapers was for sanitation and hygiene purposes, whereas CIA records indicate that in some cases a central purpose of diapers was to cause humiliation and to induce a sense of helplessness. On August 13, 2004, CIA attorneys, medical officers, and other personnel met with Department of Justice attorneys to discuss some of the techniques for which the CIA was seeking approval, in particular sleep deprivation, water dousing, and the Water Board. When asked about the possibility that detainees subjected to standing sleep deprivation could suffer from edema, OMS doctors informed the Department of Justice attorneys that it was not a problem, as the CIA would adjust shackles or the method of applying the techniques as necessary to prevent edema, as well as any chafing or over-tightness from the shackles. With regard to water dousing, CIA officers represented that water is at normal temperature. CIA makes no effort to cool the water before applying it. With respect to the Water Board, CIA officers indicated that each application should not last more than 40 seconds, and usually only lasted about 20 seconds. As detailed in the full committee study, each of these representations was incongruent with the operational history of the CIA program. On August 25, 2004, the CIA's Associate General Counsel sent a letter to the OLC stating that Janat Gul, who had been rendered to CIA custody on July, redacted, 2004, had been subjected to the attention grasp, walling, facial hold, facial slap, wall standing, stress positions, and sleep deprivation. The letter further stated that CIA interrogators assess Gul not to be cooperating and to be using a sophisticated counter-interrogation strategy, and that further use of the same enhanced interrogation techniques would be unlikely to move Gul to cooperate, absent concurrent use of dietary manipulation, nudity, water dousing, and the abdominal slap. The letter referenced the reporting from a CIA source, stating, CIA understands that before his capture, Gul had been working to facilitate a direct meeting between the redacted CIA redacted source reporting on the pre-election threat and Abu Faraj al-Libi himself.
Note, 2335. According to an August 16, 2004 cable, a CIA interrogator did not believe that escalation to enhanced measures will increase Gul's ability to produce timely, accurate locational and threat information. On August 19, 2004, a cable from detention site Black noted that the interrogation team does not believe Gul is withholding imminent threat information.
The following day, August 26, 2004, Acting Assistant Attorney General Daniel Levin informed CIA Acting General Counsel John Rizzo that the use of the four additional interrogation techniques did not violate any U.S. statutes, the U.S. Constitution, or U.S. treaty obligations. Levin's advice relied on the CIA's representations about Gul, including that there are no medical and psychological contraindications to the use of these techniques as you plan to employ them on Gul. At the time, CIA records indicated, one, that standing sleep deprivation had already caused significant swelling in Gul's legs, two, that standing sleep deprivation continued despite Gul's visual and auditory hallucinations, and that Gul was not oriented to time or place, three, that CIA interrogators on site did not believe that escalation to enhanced pressures will increase Gul's ability to produce timely, accurate locational and threat information, and four, that CIA interrogators did not believe that Gul was withholding imminent threat information. Levin's August 26, 2004 letter to Rizzo was based on the premise that we understand that Janat Gul is a high-value al-Qaeda operative who is believed to possess information concerning an imminent terrorist threat to the United States. Levin's understanding was based on the CIA's representation that Gul had been working to facilitate a direct meeting between the redacted CIA redacted source reporting on the pre-election threat and Abu Faraj al-Libi. This information later proved to be inaccurate. As detailed elsewhere in this summary, the threat of a terrorist attack to precede the November 2004 U.S. election was found to be based on a CIA source whose information was questioned by senior CTC officials at the time. The same CIA source admitted to fabricating the information after a redacted in redacted October 2004. In November 2004, after the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Janat Gul, CIA's chief of base at detention site Black, where Janat Gul was interrogated, wrote that describing Gul as highest ranking gives him a stature which is undeserved, overblown, and misleading. The chief of base added that stating that Gul had long-standing access to senior leaders in al-Qaeda is simply wrong. In December 2004, CIA officers concluded that Janat Gul was not the link to senior AQ leaders that CIA headquarters said he was, is. And in April 2005, CIA officers wrote that there simply is no smoking gun that we can refer to that would justify our continued holding of Janat Gul. By April 2005, as the OLC neared completion of a new memorandum analyzing the legality of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the OLC sought information from the CIA on what the CIA got from Janat Gul, was it valuable, and did it help anything. The CIA did not immediately respond to this request, and the CIA's associate general counsel noted that DOJ personnel had taken to calling him daily for additional information. Subsequently, on April 15, 2005, the CIA informed the OLC that during most of Gould's debriefings, he has sought to minimize his knowledge of extremist activities and has provided largely non-incriminating information about his involvement in their networks. On May 10, 2005, the OLC issued a memorandum that stated, "You informed us that the CIA believed Gould had information about Al-Qaeda's plans to launch an attack within the United States. Our conclusions depend on these assessments." The OLC referenced Redacted's August 25, 2004 letter on Gould and the pre-election threat. In a May 30, 2005 memorandum, the OLC referred to Jannat Gul as representative of the high-value detainees on whom enhanced techniques have been or might be used, and wrote that the CIA believed that Jannat Gul had actionable intelligence concerning the pre-election threat to the United States. In the same memorandum, the OLC conveyed a new CIA representation describing the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Jannat Gul, which stated, "Gul has provided information that has helped the CIA with validating one of its key assets reporting on the pre-election threat." There are no indications in the memorandum that the CIA informed the OLC that it had concluded that Gul had no information about the pre-election threat, which was the basis on which the OLC had approved the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Gul in the first place, or that CIA officers had determined that Gul was not the man we thought he was. In September 2004, the OLC advised the CIA that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Ahmed Khalfan Gailani and Sharif al-Masri was also legal, based on the CIA's representations that the two detainees were Al-Qaeda operatives involved in the operational planning of the pre-election plot against the United States. This CIA assessment was based on the same fabrications from the same CIA questions from the same CIA source. Like Jannat Gul, Gailani and al-Masri were subjected to extended sleep deprivation and experienced hallucinations. D. May 2005 OLC memoranda rely on inaccurate representations from the CIA regarding the interrogation process, the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, and the effectiveness of the techniques. On May 4, 2005, Acting Assistant Attorney General Stephen Bradbury faxed to CIA Associate General Counsel, Redacted, questions related to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, in which Bradbury referenced medical journal articles. The following day, Redacted sent a letter to Bradbury stating that the CIA's responses had been composed by the CIA's Office of Medical Services, OMS. The CIA response stated that any lowering of the threshold of pain caused by sleep deprivation was not germane to the program. Because studies had only identified differences in sensitivity to heat, cold, and pressure, and the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques do not involve application of heat, cold, pressure, any sharp objects, or indeed any objects at all. With regard to the effect of sleep deprivation on the experience of water dousing, the CIA response stated that at temperatures of water we have recommended for the program, the likelihood of induction of pain by water dousing is very low under any circumstances, and not a phenomenon we have seen in detainees subject to this technique.
Note, 2356. The CIA had subjected detainees to cold water baths during periods of sleep deprivation. As a CIA psychologist noted, "I heard Abu Hudhaifa gasp out loud several times as he was placed in the tub." The inspector general later reported that as a result of being bathed in ice water, Abu Hudhaifa was shivering and interrogators were concerned about his body temperature dropping.
In response to Bradbury's query as to when edema or shackling would become painful as a result of standing sleep deprivation, the CIA responded, "We have not observed this phenomenon in the interrogations performed to date, and have no reason to believe on theoretical grounds that edema or shackling would be more painful, provided the shackles are maintained with appropriate slack, and interrogators follow medical officers' recommendations to end standing sleep deprivation and use an alternative technique when the medical officer judges that edema is significant in any way. The CIA response added that the medical officer's recommendations are always followed, and that detainees have not complained about pain from edema. Much of this information was inaccurate. Bradbury further inquired whether it was possible to tell reliably, e.g., from outward physical signs like grimaces, whether a detainee is experiencing severe pain. The CIA responded that all pain is subjective, not objective, adding, "Medical officers can monitor for evidence of condition or injury that most people would consider painful, and can observe the individual for outward displays and expressions associated with the experience of pain. Medical officers can and do ask the subject after the interrogation session has concluded if he is in pain, and have and do provide analgesics, such as Tylenol and Aleve, to detainees who report headache and other discomforts during their interrogations. We reiterate that an interrogation session would be stopped if, in the judgment of the interrogators or medical personnel, medical attention was required." As described elsewhere, multiple CIA detainees were subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques despite their medical conditions. Bradbury's facts also inquired whether monitoring and safeguards will effectively avoid severe physical pain or suffering for detainees, which was a formulation of the statutory definition of torture under consideration. Despite concerns from OMS that its assessments could be used to support a legal review of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the CIA's response stated, "It is OMS's view that based on our limited experience and the extensive experience of the military with these techniques, the program in place has effectively avoided severe physical pain and suffering, and should continue to do so. Application of the 13 techniques has not to date resulted in any severe or permanent physical injury, or any injury other than transient bruising, and we do not expect this to change." In May 2005, Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Stephen Bradbury signed 3 memoranda that relied on information provided by the CIA that was inconsistent with CIA's operational records. On May 10, 2005, Bradbury signed 2 memoranda analyzing the statutory prohibition on torture with regard to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques and to the use of the interrogation techniques in combination. On May 30, 2005, Bradbury signed another memorandum examining U.S. obligations under the Convention Against Torture. The memoranda approved 13 techniques: 1. Dietary manipulation, 2. Nudity, 3. Attention grasp, 4. Walling, 5. Facial hold, 6. Facial slap or insult slap, 7. Abdominal slap, 8. Cramped confinement, 9. Wall standing, 10. Stress positions, 11. Water dousing, 12. Sleep deprivation, more than 48 hours, and 13. The waterboard. The 3 memoranda relied on numerous CIA representations that, as detailed elsewhere, were incongruent with CIA records, including 1. The CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques would be used only when the interrogation team considers them necessary because a detainee is withholding important, actionable intelligence, or there is insufficient time to try other techniques. 2. The use of the techniques is discontinued if the detainee is judged to be consistently providing accurate intelligence, or if he is no longer believed to have actionable intelligence. 3. The use of the techniques usually ends after just a few days when the detainee begins participating. 4. The interrogation techniques would not be used on a detainee not reasonably thought to possess important, actionable intelligence that could not be obtained otherwise. And 5. The interrogation process begins with an open, non-threatening approach to discern if the CIA detainee would be cooperative. The OLC memoranda also relied on CIA representations regarding specific interrogation techniques that were incongruent with the operational history of the program. For example, the CIA informed the OLC that it maintained a 75-degree minimum room temperature for nude detainees as a matter of policy, with a minimum of 68 degrees in the case of technical problems. This information was inconsistent with CIA practice both before and after the CIA's representation to the OLC. The OLC relied on the CIA representation that standing sleep deprivation would be discontinued in the case of significant swelling of the lower extremities, edema. Whereas in practice, the technique was repeatedly not stopped when edema occurred. The OLC also repeated CIA representations that constant light was necessary for security, even though the CIA had subjected detainees to constant darkness.
Note, 2369. According to a CIA cable, cells at detention site Cobalt were blacked out at all times using curtains plus painted exterior windows and double doors. The lights are never turned on. Upon finding Ramzi Ben al-Shib cowering in the corner, shivering, when the light in his cell burned out, interrogators decided to use darkness as an interrogation technique. He was then placed in sleep deprivation, standing, shackled feet and hands with hands over his head, naked, in total darkness.
Additional CIA representations accepted by the OLC and found to be inconsistent with CIA practice related to 1. The exposure of nude detainees to other detainees and detention facility staff, 2. The use of water dousing, specifically the inaccurate representation that the technique did not involve immersion, 3. The use of shackles in standing sleep deprivation, 4. The likelihood of hallucinations during sleep deprivation, 5. The responsibility of medical personnel to intervene when standing sleep deprivation results in hallucinations, and 6. The purpose and use of diapers on CIA detainees. The OLC repeated the CIA's representations that the effect of the waterboard is to induce a sensation of drowning, that the detainee experiences this sensation even if he is aware that he is not actually drowning, and that, as far as can be determined, Abu Zubaydah and KSM did not experience physical pain or, in the professional judgment of doctors, there is any medical reason to believe they would have done so. The OLC further accepted that physical sensations associated with waterboarding, such as choking, end when the application ends. This information is incongruent with CIA records. According to CIA records, Abu Zubaydah's waterboarding sessions resulted in immediate fluid intake and involuntary leg, chest, and arm spasms, and hysterical pleas. A medical officer who oversaw the interrogation of KSM stated that the waterboard technique had evolved beyond the sensation of drowning to what he described as a series of near drownings. Physical reactions to waterboarding did not necessarily end when the application of water was discontinued, as both Abu Zubaydah and KSM vomited after being subjected to the waterboard. Further, as previously described, during at least one waterboard session, Abu Zubaydah became completely unresponsive, with bubbles rising through his open, full mouth. He remained unresponsive after the waterboard was rotated upwards. Upon medical intervention, he regained consciousness and expelled copious amounts of liquid. The CIA also relayed information to the OLC on the frequency with which the waterboard could be used that was incongruent with past operational practice. The May 10, 2005 memorandum analyzing the individual use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques accepted the CIA's representations that the CIA interrogators are trained for approximately 4 weeks and that all personnel directly engaged in the interrogation of persons detained have been appropriately screened from the medical, psychological, and security standpoints. The CIA representations about training and screening were incongruent with the operational history of the CIA program. CIA records indicate that CIA officers and contractors who conducted CIA interrogations in 2002 did not undergo any interrogation training. The first interrogator training course did not begin until November 12, 2002. By which time at least 25 detainees had been taken into CIA custody. Numerous CIA investigators and other CIA personnel associated with the program had either suspected or documented personal and professional problems that raised questions about their judgment and CIA employment. This group of officers included individuals who, among other issues, had engaged in inappropriate detainee interrogations, had workplace anger management issues, and had reportedly admitted to sexual assault.
Note, 2380. Among other abuses, redacted Russian roulette with a detainee. Redacted CIA officer 2 who threatened Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri with a gun and power drill. Redacted. He was sent home short of tour twice, once for redacted, and again a few months before interrogating al-Nashiri for engaging in redacted.
Finally, the OLC accepted the definition of high-value detainee conveyed by the CIA that limited the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to senior members of al-Qaeda or an associated terrorist group who have knowledge of imminent terrorist threats or direct involvement in planning and preparing terrorist actions. However, at the time of the OLC opinion, the CIA had used its enhanced interrogation techniques on CIA detainees who were found neither to have knowledge of imminent threats nor to have been directly involved in planning or preparing terrorist actions. Some were not senior al-Qaeda members or even members of al-Qaeda. Others were never suspected of having information on or a role in terrorist plotting and were suspected only of having information on the location of UBL or other al-Qaeda figures, or were simply believed to have been present at a suspected al-Qaeda guest house. A year later, redacted CTC Legal wrote to Acting Assistant Attorney General Stephen Bradbury, suggesting a new standard that more closely reflected actual practice by allowing for the CIA detention and interrogation of detainees to be based on the belief that the detainee had information that could assist in locating senior al-Qaeda leadership. The OLC modified the standard in a memorandum dated July 20, 2007. By then, the last CIA detainee, Mohammed Rahim, had already entered CIA custody. The May 30, 2005 OLC memorandum analyzing U.S. obligations under the Convention Against Torture relied heavily on CIA representations about the intelligence obtained from the program. Many of these representations were provided in a March 2, 2005 CIA memorandum known as the Effectiveness Memo, in which the CIA advised that the CIA program works and the techniques are effective in producing foreign intelligence. The Effectiveness Memo stated that, "We assess we would not have succeeded in overcoming the resistance of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, Abu Zubaydah, and other equally resistant high-value terrorist detainees without applying in a careful, professional, and safe manner the full range of interrogation techniques." The CIA Effectiveness Memo further stated that, prior to the use of enhanced techniques against skilled resistors like KSM and Abu Zubaydah, the two most prolific intelligence producers in our control, CIA acquired little threat information or significant actionable intelligence information. As described in this summary, the key information provided by Abu Zubaydah that the CIA attributed to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was provided prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. KSM was subjected to CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques within minutes of his questioning, and thus had no opportunity to divulge information prior to their use. As described elsewhere, CIA personnel concluded that the waterboard was not an effective interrogation technique against KSM. Under a section entitled Results, the CIA Effectiveness Memo represented that the CIA use of DOJ-approved enhanced interrogation techniques as a part of a comprehensive interrogation approach has enabled CIA to disrupt terrorist plots, capture additional terrorists, and collect a high volume of critical intelligence on al-Qaeda. It then listed 11 examples of critical intelligence acquired after applying enhanced interrogation techniques: the Karachi plot, the Heathrow plot, the Second Wave, the Garuba cell, Isa al-Hindi, Abu Tala al-Pakistani, Hanbali's capture, Jafar al-Tayyar, the Dirty Bomb plot, the Shoe Bomber, and intelligence obtained on Shkai, Pakistan. These representations of effectiveness were almost entirely inaccurate and mirrored other inaccurate information provided to the White House, Congress, and the CIA Inspector General. In addition, on April 15, 2005, the CIA provided the OLC with an 8-page document entitled Briefing Notes on the Value of Detainee Reporting. The CIA Briefing Notes document repeats many of the same CIA representations in the effectiveness memo, but added additional inaccurate information related to the capture of Ayman Faris. The OLC's May 30, 2005 memorandum relied on the CIA's inaccurate representations of the effectiveness memo and the briefing notes document in determining that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques did not violate the Fifth Amendment's prohibition on executive conduct that shocks the conscience, indicating that this analysis was a highly context-specific and fact-dependent question. The OLC also linked its analysis of whether the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was constitutionally arbitrary to the representations by the CIA that its interrogation program produced substantial quantities of otherwise unavailable actionable intelligence. The CIA's representations to the OLC that it obtained otherwise unavailable actionable intelligence from the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were inaccurate. The OLC memorandum repeated specific inaccurate CIA representations, including that the waterboard was used against Abu Zubaydah and KSM only after it became clear that standard interrogation techniques were not working, that the information related to the Garuba cell in Karachi was otherwise unavailable actionable intelligence, that Janat Gul was a high-value detainee, that information provided by Hassan Gul regarding the al-Qaeda presence in Shkai, Pakistan, was attributable to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Citing CIA information, the OLC memorandum also stated that Abu Zubaydah was al-Qaeda's third or fourth highest-ranking member and had been involved in every major terrorist operation carried out by al-Qaeda, and that, again, once enhanced techniques were employed, Abu Zubaydah provided significant information on two operatives who planned to build and detonate a dirty bomb in the Washington, D.C. area. The OLC repeated additional inaccurate information from the CIA related to KSM's reporting, including representations about the second wave plotting, the Heathrow Airport plotting, and the captures of Hanbali, Ayman Faris, and Sajid Badat. The OLC relied on CIA representations that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Abid al-Rahim al-Nashiri produced notable results as early as the first day, despite al-Nashiri providing reporting on the same topics prior to entering CIA custody. The OLC also repeated inaccurate CIA representations about statements reportedly made by Abu Zubaydah and KSM.
Note, 2398. The OLC memorandum stated that both KSM and Zubaydah had expressed their belief that the general U.S. population was weak, lacked resilience, and would be unable to do what was necessary to prevent the terrorists from succeeding in their goals. As described elsewhere in this summary and in more detail in the full committee study, CIA records indicate that KSM and Abu Zubaydah did not make these statements. The memorandum also repeated CIA representations about KSM's comment, "Soon you will know," and Abu Zubaydah's reported statements about being permitted by Allah to provide information. As described in this summary, these representations are not supported by CIA records.
Finally, the May 30, 2005 OLC memorandum referenced the CIA Inspector General May 2004 special review, stating, "We understand that interrogations have led to specific actionable intelligence, as well as a general increase in the amount of intelligence regarding al-Qaeda and its affiliates." The OLC memorandum cited pages in the special review that included inaccurate information provided by CIA personnel to the CIA's OIG, including representations related to Jose Padilla and Binyam Mohammed, Hanbali and the al-Qaeda cell in Karachi, the Parachas, Ayman Faris, Salih al-Mari, Majid Khan, the Heathrow Airport plotting, and other plots. E. After passage of the Detainee Treatment Act, OLC issues opinion on CIA conditions of confinement, withdraws draft opinion on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques after the U.S. Supreme Court case of Hamdan v. Rumsfeld. On December 19, 2005, anticipating the package of the Detainee Treatment Act, Acting CIA General Counsel John Rizzo requested that the OLC review whether the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, as well as the conditions of confinement at CIA detention facilities, would violate the Detainee Treatment Act. In April 2006, attorneys at OLC completed initial drafts of two legal memoranda addressing these questions. In June 2006, however, the U.S. Supreme Court case of Hamdan v. Rumsfeld prompted the OLC to withdraw its draft memorandum on the impact of the Detainee Treatment Act on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. As redacted CTC Legal explained, the OLC would prepare a written opinion if we want, but strongly implied that we shouldn't seek it. As described in a July 2009 report of the Department of Justice Office of Professional Responsibility, the administration determined that after the Hamdan decision, it would need new legislation to support the continued use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Even as it withdrew its draft opinion on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the OLC continued to analyze whether the CIA's conditions of confinement violated the Detainee Treatment Act. To support this analysis, the CIA asserted to the OLC that loud music and white noise, constant light, and 24-hour shackling were all for security purposes, that shaving was for security and hygiene purposes and was conducted only upon intake and not as a punitive step. The detainees were not exposed to an extended period of white noise, and that CIA detainees had access to a wide array of amenities. This information is incongruent with CIA records. Detainees were routinely shaved, sometimes as an aid to interrogation. Detainees who were participating at an acceptable level were permitted to grow their hair and beards. The CIA had used music at decibels exceeding the representations to the OLC. The CIA had also used specific music to signal to a detainee that another interrogation was about to begin. Numerous CIA detainees were subjected to the extended use of white noise. The CIA further inaccurately represented that medical personnel will advise ending sleep deprivation in the event the detainee appears to be experiencing hallucinations, transient or not. In a May 18, 2006 letter, redacted, CTC Legal, redacted, wrote to the Department of Justice that some of these conditions provide the additional benefit of setting a detention atmosphere conducive to continued intelligence collection from the detainee. While the letter referred generally to constant light levels in the cells, use of white noise, use of shackles, hooding, and shaving/barbering, it described an intelligence collection purpose only for shaving, which allows interrogators a clear view of the terrorist detainee's facial cues. On August 31, 2006, the OLC finalized two legal analyses on the conditions of confinement at CIA detention sites. The first was a memorandum that evaluated whether six detention conditions in the CIA's detention program were consistent with the Detainee Treatment Act. The second, provided in the form of a letter, concluded that these same six conditions did not violate the requirements of Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. The OLC relied on the CIA's representations related to conditions of confinement for its analysis. The OLC wrote that, "Underlying our analysis of all these methods, conditions of confinement, is our understanding that the CIA provides regular and thorough medical and psychological care to the detainees in its custody. As detailed in this summary, the lack of emergency medical care for CIA detainees was a significant challenge for the CIA." The August 31, 2006 OLC memorandum applying the terms of the Detainee Treatment Act to the conditions of confinement at CIA detention facilities stated that, "Over the history of the program, the CIA has detained a total of 96 individuals. This was based on a representation made by redacted CTC Legal on April 23, 2006. As of the date of the OLC memorandum, the CIA had detained at least 118 individuals. The OLC memorandum also stated that, "We understand that once the CIA assesses that a detainee no longer possesses significant intelligence value, the CIA seeks to move the detainee into alternative detention arrangements." CIA records indicate that detainees had remained in CIA custody long after the CIA had determined that they no longer possessed significant intelligence. Finally, the OLC memorandum repeated a number of earlier inaccurate CIA representations on the effectiveness of the program, citing both the CIA's effectiveness memo and its own May 30, 2005 memorandum. Notably, the August 31, 2006 OLC memorandum repeated the same inaccurate representation, which first appeared in an August 2002 OLC memorandum, that Abu Zubaydah was al-Qaeda's third or fourth highest-ranking member and had been involved in every major terrorist operation carried out by al-Qaeda. As described, CIA records as early as 2002 did not support these representations, and 2 weeks prior to the issuance of the August 2006 memorandum, the CIA had published an intelligence assessment stating that Abu Zubaydah had been rejected by al-Qaeda and explaining how the CIA had come to miscast Abu Zubaydah as a senior al-Qaeda lieutenant. F. July 2007 OLC memorandum relies on inaccurate CIA representations regarding CIA interrogations and the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. CIA misrepresents congressional views to the Department of Justice. On July 20, 2007, the OLC issued a memorandum applying the War Crimes Act, the Detainee Treatment Act, and the Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The memorandum noted that while the Hamdan decision was contrary to the president's prior determination that Common Article 3 does not apply to an armed conflict across national boundaries with an international terrorist organization such as al-Qaeda, this challenge to the CIA program was resolved by the Military Commissions Act, which left responsibility for interpreting the meaning and application of Common Article 3, except for the grave breaches defined in the amended War Crimes Act, to the president. The OLC memorandum determined that six proposed interrogation techniques were legal: dietary manipulation, extended sleep deprivation, the facial hold, the attention grasp, the abdominal slap, and the insult or facial slap. The memorandum accepted the CIA's representation that over the life of the program, the CIA had detained 98 individuals, of whom 30 had been subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. At the time of the OLC memorandum, the CIA had detained at least 119 individuals, of whom at least 38 had been subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The inaccurate statistics provided by the CIA to the OLC were used to support OLC's conclusion that the program was proportionate to the government interest involved, as required by the Shocks the Conscience test. The OLC also noted that careful screening procedures are in place to ensure that enhanced techniques will be used only in interrogations of agents or members of al-Qaeda or its affiliates who are reasonably believed to possess critical intelligence that can be used to prevent future terrorist attacks against the United States and its interests. In practice, numerous individuals had been detained by the CIA and subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, despite doubts and questions surrounding their knowledge of terrorist threats and the location of senior al-Qaeda leadership. Examples include, among others, Asadullah, Mustafa al-Hawsawi, Abu Hudaifa, Arsala Khan, Abu Talha al-Maghrebi, and Abu Bahar al-Turki, Janat Gul, Ahmed Gailani, Sharif al-Masri, and Saeed Ibrahim.
Note, 2422. Interrogators had asked CIA headquarters for the assessments supporting the decision to subject Asadullah to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, noting that it would be of enormous help to the interrogator to know what is concrete fact and what is good analysis. In response, Alex Station acknowledged that, to be sure, our case that Asadullah should have a good sense of bin Laden's location is circumstantial. The following day, interrogators commented that it may be that he simply does not know the locational information on AQ leaders. Note, 2423. Following al-Hawsawi's first interrogation session, Chief of Interrogations Redacted asked CIA headquarters for information on what al-Hawsawi actually knows, saying he does not appear to be a person that is a financial mastermind. However, we lack facts with which to confront al-Hawsawi. What we need at this point is substantive information, vice supposition. Note, 2424. Although CIA records include no requests or approval cables, Abu Hudhaifa was subjected to ice water baths and 66 hours of standing sleep deprivation. He was released because the CIA discovered he was likely not the person he was believed to be. Note, 2425. CIA headquarters initially resisted approving Arsala Khan's capture because of a lack of information confirming that he was a continuing threat. Despite doubts that Arsala Khan was the individual sought by the CIA, interrogators subjected him to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to make a better assessment regarding his willingness to start talking or assess if our subject is, in fact, the man we are looking for. Note, 2426. The true names of these detainees have been replaced with the capitalized pseudonyms al-Maghrabi and al-Turki. At the time the two detainees were rendered to CIA custody, the CIA was aware that they were then working for a foreign partner government. They were subjected to sleep deprivation and dietary manipulation until the CIA confirmed that the detainees had been trying to contact the CIA for weeks to inform the CIA of what they believed were pending al-Qaeda terrorist attacks. After the CIA had determined that al-Maghrabi and al-Turki should not be in CIA custody, the two detainees were held for redacted additional months before they were released. Note, 2427. The case of Jannat Gul is described above in the context of OLC advice in 2004 and afterwards. As Gul's interrogators noted, Team does not believe Gul is withholding imminent threat information. However, Team will continue to press Gul for that during each session. Note, 2428. The CIA's assessment of Gailani's knowledge of terrorist threats was speculative. As one official noted, although Gailani's role in operational planning is unclear, his respected role in al-Qaeda and presence in Shikai as recently as October 2003 may have provided him some knowledge about ongoing attack planning against the United States homeland and the operatives involved. Note, 2429. As noted above, the credibility of this source implicating Sharif al-Masri, Jannat Gul, and Gailani's connection to a pre-election plot was questioned by CIA officials prior to the application of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against them. The source was later determined to have fabricated the information. Note, 2430. 5 days after interrogators began using enhanced interrogation techniques against Sayyid Ibrahim, interrogators cabled CIA headquarters requesting information that would definitely link Ibrahim to nefarious activity or knowledge by Ibrahim of known nefarious activities of al-Qaeda members, if this is possible. Without receiving a response, they continued to subject Ibrahim to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. CIA headquarters, which rejected an assessment from two debriefers that Ibrahim was, at best, a low-level facilitator, would later indicate that it was uncertain he would meet the requirements for U.S. military or redacted detention.
The July 20, 2007 OLC memorandum also stated that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques are not the first option for CIA interrogators confronted with even a high-value detainee. As described in this summary, numerous CIA detainees were subjected to the CIA's enhanced or standard interrogation techniques on their first day of CIA custody. While other detainees provided significant information prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the OLC memorandum also accepted the CIA representation that the CIA generally does not ask questions during the administration of the techniques to which the CIA does not already know the answers, that the CIA asks for already known information during the administration of the CIA's enhanced interrogation technique, and that when CIA personnel believe a detainee will cooperate, the CIA would discontinue use of the techniques and debrief the detainee regarding matters on which the CIA is not definitely informed. As the memorandum concluded, this approach highlights the intended psychological effects of the techniques and reduces the ability of the detainee to provide false information solely as a means to discontinue their application. This description of the program was inaccurate. As described in this summary, and in more detail in the full committee study, CIA interrogators always question detainees during the application of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques seeking new information to which the CIA did not have answers. And numerous detainees fabricated information while being subjected to the interrogation techniques. The July 20, 2007 OLC memorandum repeated CIA representations that many, if not all, of those 30 detainees who had been subjected to CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques received counter-interrogation training, and that Al-Qaeda operatives believe that they are morally permitted to reveal information once they have reached a certain level of discomfort. Neither of these representations is supported by CIA records. The memorandum also repeated CIA representations that interrogators were highly trained in carrying out the techniques and psychologically screened to minimize the risk that an interrogator might misuse any technique. These presumptions were central to the OLC's determination that the limitations on interrogations contained in the Army Field Manual were not dispositive evidence that the CIA's interrogation program fell outside traditional executive behavior and contemporary practice, an analysis required as part of the substantive due process inquiry. Specifically, the OLC distinguished U.S. military interrogations from the CIA program by stating that the CIA program will be administered only by trained and experienced interrogators who in turn will apply the techniques only to a subset of high-value detainees. As described in this summary and in greater detail in the full committee study, the CIA's representations to the OLC were incongruent with the history of the CIA's detention and interrogation program with regard to the training, screening, and experience of interrogators, and the detainees against whom the CIA used its enhanced interrogation techniques. The July 2007 OLC memorandum based its legal analysis related to the six interrogation techniques under consideration on CIA representations that were incongruent with the operational history of the program. In reviewing whether standing sleep deprivation was consistent with the War Crimes Act, the OLC noted that its understanding that the technique would be discontinued should any hallucinations or significant declines in cognitive functioning be observed was crucial to our analysis. The memorandum repeated CIA representations that diapers employed during standing sleep deprivation are used solely for sanitary and health reasons and not to humiliate the detainee, and that, more generally, the techniques are not intended to humiliate or to degrade. The OLC's understanding, which, as described, was not consistent with the operational history of the CIA program, was part of its analysis related to the prohibition on outrages upon personal dignity under Common Article 3. As in the May 30, 2005 OLC memorandum, the July 20, 2007 OLC memorandum conducted an analysis of the shocks the conscience test under the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, emphasizing the fact-specific nature of the analysis. Citing both the CIA's March 2005 effectiveness memo and the President's September 6, 2006 speech describing the interrogation program, the July 2007 OLC memorandum repeated the CIA assertion that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques produced otherwise unavailable intelligence.